A new year and 6 months after the University of Wisconsin system began having a deal with a two-year cut of $250 million in state aid is a great time to have a Newsmakers conversation with Ray Cross, president of the UW system. Ray, welcome back to Wisconsin.
Thanks, Steve. Nice to be here.
The system has been dealing with the first part of this cut. It's a two-year cut of $250 million, as you well know. So let's talk about the impact 6 months later of those cuts, sir, on the system of 26 campuses.
Well, first you have to realize that it cannot be taken in isolation. This is the latest in a series of cuts to the university. So it's not just $250 million. It's accumulated $250 prior to that, et cetera, in different governor's eras. So we've been dealing with these cuts for quite some time, Steve. Latest one is probably the most severe because they also blocked us from raising any tuition.
Do you consider that another cut, the four-year freeze in resident undergrad tuition, Mr. Cross?
Yes, of course it is. It's a cut. The challenge then is, and the question you ask is, what was the impact? What's the impact? I think you're seeing the impact in the colleges with the consolidation of administrative positions within the entire university. We're doing everything we can to limit the impact on the classroom, back office operations, support systems. But we are reaching our limit in our ability to squeeze any additional funds out of that. In addition to that, I think the thing that perhaps concerns me the most about the cut is not so much what we've been unable to do, but what we've been unable to pursue. Higher education is about the future, and so much of what we attempt to do is to get into position, whether we're hiring the right staff, the right faculty, the right researchers, in order to enable us to identify and begin the development of the next big thing. That's part of our job. The other piece of this that accompanies the cuts is the lack of compensation. We've been unable to make any kind of a serious adjustment to faculty, for the most part, for almost 8 years now. That is harmful.
Well, has the system-wide, have you lost some of your best and brightest? Because of the budget cuts, they have just been wooed to other universities, certain colleges?
The data suggest, if you look at raw data, Steve, the number of people that have left is roughly the same as we normally lose. What you don't see in looking at the raw data is if you lose an Aaron Rodgers as opposed to a second string person who covers the kickoffs, that's a different loss. So we think we've lost some really good talent. In some cases, it's hard to tell whether they were offered something we just couldn't match anyway. I know that there have been prominent faculty that we all admire. They have been recruited by other institutions. Heretofore, we've done everything we could to keep them.
Is the UW-Madison doing better dealing with the cuts because of their ability to work with the alumni and their stronger fundraising programs than some of your other four-year schools? Excuse me.
Well, I would argue that proportionally their cuts were bigger too. So, do they have different avenues, different resources, different alternatives? Yes, but they also took a big hit. So, yes, they have some alternatives. But the impact on the Madison campus has been just as severe, if not more severe than other campuses.
Let me ask you this. We'll be debating here the next two-year budget a year from now. What resident undergraduate tuition can you foresee the Regents recommending? And I realize they won't recommend that till this fall. But for the next two-year budget cycle, can you see recommending resident tuition undergrad increases of 2%, 5% more? Do you have to play serious catch-up, sir?
Well, I would hope that we would not base the increases in tuition on an arbitrary or capricious model. That's why we have a tuition development task force right now trying to find a rational way to set tuition. And we're basing that, Steve, on four different items. First of all, what does it cost to deliver that educational experience? So cost has to be a factor. Secondly, what is the market? What do competitors in that marketplace offer those educational experiences for? And thirdly, what are the state's needs? Does the state really need this particular discipline? Right now, the IT discipline, that's a broad discipline, Steve. Mm-hmm. That's badly needed in this state. High demand right now. Teachers are going to be in that position very shortly. So what does the state need, and how does the university create incentives rationally to attract people to those disciplines? And then, of course, the fourth category is, how does this relate to the ability of the average citizen to pay? So there has to be some connections to average earnings of Wisconsin population. Are we growing at a faster rate than the average earnings? So that's a rational basis. Ironically, I've been a part of different systems that have tried to do this as well. It seldom works because politically people say, well, that doesn't smell right, that doesn't feel right, that isn't appropriate, here's what it's going to be.
But the UW system cannot absorb freezing resident undergrad tuition for a fifth and sixth year, correct?
No.
Cannot?
No.
Okay.
Without dramatic changes.
Now, follow-up question, those dramatic potential changes would be?
I don't know yet.
Okay.
We're trying to take things step by step. A year ago, I didn't think we would experience a cut. I didn't necessarily think we would get a lot of money in the budget, but I didn't think we would experience a cut. I don't think we're going to get a cut next year. I don't think that's the case. But I have been wrong before. So we're trying to prepare the logical arguments, do our work in the Capitol with legislators, with the public, to help them understand the importance of the university to the future of this state.
Well, the governor initially, as you know, recommended a $300 million two-year cut. The end result was a $250 million. You had said a significant cut, you'd be willing to resign. So the difference there, save you your job? Sorry for the crass question.
Well, actually, the cut was less than that, too, because they lapsed $25 million. So it's basically a $200 million cut.
Okay.
So, yes, that was probably critically important to the whole system and to the state. In addition to that, I think it was important that we retain tenure and shared governance. And I know we'll probably talk about those.
But yeah, tenure is where I want to go next. Why originally, correct me if I'm wrong, the UW-Madison was going to set its own tenure guidelines and rules, and now a system-wide approach. So why a system-wide approach and not letting UW-Madison go first, sir?
Well, there always was a system-wide approach. The board was going to adopt one policy. Under that policy were practices and policies that were specific to each institution, that would be specific to each institution. And that's what we essentially have. So Madison was adopting its faculty policies and procedures, what they call their FP&Ps, mm-hmm. before the board adopted its broader piece. It turns out that 99% of what Madison approved in its FP&P it comports perfectly with the broader policy. So I think I think in the end we came essentially to the same place.
Okay. Last week when Wisconsin, I interviewed Governor Walker, he said he'd been in discussions with you and the UW system about changes that would allow specialized degrees to be achieved in 4 and even 3 years. Can you describe how that might work without betraying any plans that the governor is going to announce soon?
Well, we're talking with folks in the Fox Valley on a pilot basis, Oshkosh, UW-Green Bay, UW-Oshkosh, UW-Fox Valley, and the technical college there, the Fox Valley Technical College, and Northwest. And with a number of businesses, 7 or 8 larger businesses, about a three-year degree model. Most institutions approach a three-year degree model by compressing one year into two summer sessions. So you really still pay for 4 years. It's just that you compress it in a time frame. You do get out into the workplace sooner, so your earnings then would help off some. What we're looking at is addressing the total time to degree. That's one of the big factors in reducing costs to students and families. So one of the ideas we're working on is piloting a three-year degree where the first year is concurrent with a student in high school, their senior year, working with some local high schools. So that first year of a four-year, in this case, IT degree, would be offered in the high school.
So it would be IT.
And that's the huge need in the Fox Valley.
Is that the model that you hope to set up with the Fox Valley, this consortium?
Yeah. And our goal then is that students who agree to enter into that program, and we partner with high schools, and we deliver the first year in concert with them, that businesses will help pay for those students, that experience in the high school, and reduce their costs to essentially 3 years of a four-year degree, and employ them in the summers, and make a commitment to employ them upon graduation, if everything continues to be positive. So our goal is to attract people into that field and to make it inexpensive or less expensive for them to complete a college degree in that field with guaranteed employment at the end of that experience.
Cooperation then from the high schools, from the tech colleges, and from the UW system.
And businesses.
And businesses, thank you. That's the fourth base in the diamond here. And if that worked out, they would have a BA from the UW system or
yes.
a tech co- they would.
A BS probably. It's a BS probably.
If you're talking about this, would it be set up next school year?
We aren't sure yet. We're having conversations. It takes a while to put some of this together. We may have some of those courses in high schools through dual enrollment right now. We may not have all of them. Is it possible? What experiences must we be able to provide? So ideally, we would admit and enroll students during their junior year for their senior year, and those courses would count as dual enrollment for high school credit as well as college credit.
That's a very interesting program. So you're pretty optimistic that you can get it up off the ground and running?
Well, I'm optimistic that we're going to give it one heck of a try. Okay. And I'm also optimistic that we can develop the partnerships we need to make it work. We want to make sure it's of quality, that businesses are pleased and partner with us, that high schools feel comfortable with it, and that our folks are as well. And we need to find out where are the things that we don't see right now, the unintended consequences from this kind of action.
Okay, new subject. How would you describe the UW system's relationship with the GOP leaders of the Assembly and Senate who just cut aid by $250 million or what's a better number, 200?
Yeah.
Okay. But how would you describe that? The reason is it fair to say that some Republican legislators are more antagonistic towards the UW system than Republican legislators in the 1970s, 1980s? Is this divide, can it be closed?
Yes. What is the divide? And it's not necessarily between parties. The Democrats cut the university just as much.
Under Governor Dole.
They did, however, provide opportunities for tuition increases, so there's a little difference. Most of this has to do with the economy of the state and its inability to maintain the kind of economic growth that had been planned and that we all thought would be successful. I believe that both parties, if the money was there, would invest in the university right away. Now, I would also argue that I'm an educator. That's my job. That's what we are supposed to do. And part of our job is to help the public understand and legislators they elect what it is we do and how we do it and why it's important So much of what we do doesn't occur in a two-year window, an election cycle, if you will. It occurs over a much longer period. We deal in futures. That's what we do. Future graduates, future students, future research, we do all of that. How do we explain that to legislators? And I would argue much of what the public perceives about the university, including tenure. This is not a job for life. It's never been a job for life. It's a way of protecting the ability for faculty to have free speech, to pursue their ideas, to pursue research. But the perceptions about that are incredibly different. How do we educate? You don't do that by building another wall or by throwing bricks over the wall. You do that by engagement. So in response to your question, Steve, I'm trying to be engaged. And there are a number of issues that legislators from either party, when they raise questions about the university, that's how that's perceived. I wonder why that's what are we doing incorrectly or inappropriately that would make people perceive it that way? And what do we have to do to change that? And I think that's a part of what I'm trying to do. Or perhaps that they're right. We should be doing that. How do we fix that? And I don't think we get the opportunity to engage and to educate and for us to change as well if you're disengaged.
You said earlier you don't expect another cut in the next budget. Do you expect them to restore some of the 200 or 250 that they cut in the current budget? Or would you be happy with getting what you're getting, the system getting what you're getting now, sir?
Well, I'd never be happy. I always want more.
Understand, but...
Yeah. I'm always pursuing resources because there are so many things we should be doing that we aren't doing. And I'm not satisfied with maintaining the status quo. And I think that's important. I do also understand the economy of the state needs to grow at a faster rate. My argument is that we can help that. We are a great engine in the economy, not just because we employ people, and it's because we have spin-offs constantly. There are companies right here in Madison. I could talk about that. I can't remember the name of the company. It's the skin development company. They develop scaffolds to grow skin on. The military just signed a major contract. We lost the faculty member because she went out on her own to start this company. It's a marvelous thing. It's a marvelous thing. And those are the kinds of things, along with a lot of others, that the university does that we don't get credit for.
The value of a liberal arts degree has come under fire recently. Let me check my notes. Senator Marco Rubio has been among those questioning the value of a liberal arts major, at one point mocking someone for majoring in philosophy. Do the critics have a point? Would you offer a defense of the liberal arts degree?
The United States was founded upon the principles of John Locke and David Hume and Plato. I want a country that has and is equipped with people who are thinkers, not just welders. I think you don't have to think very long about that. Certainly, we need welders and we need craftsmen and we need people with skills, but I also want those people to be thinkers. I talked to an employer the other day who said, yes, I need welders, but I need welders who can think. And I want employees, I want citizens in this country who are thinkers. The field of philosophy is rooted in the why questions. And sometimes those are simple questions that we simply overlook. Why does that happen? Why are we doing that? Why is that important? What are the moral principles? What are the aesthetic principles? What are the values? This country was founded on so many of those important principles that Jefferson articulated in the Declaration of Independence, and he practically quoted John Locke. It's that kind of thinking that moves the whole country. But it's also the kind of thinking that employers need in the people that work for them. In England, one of the hottest disciplines right now is philosophy. And there's humor in that. It's almost comical. Employers are going back in order to think about logical fallacies, about what should be done here, to critically evaluate things. We need people with those tools. Now, I would argue that technical people technically skilled people, they have analytical tools as well. They're often narrowly defined and applied in a discipline. Whereas the tools you learn in a logic course in philosophy are tools that apply to just this broad array of events you encounter in society. We need more of those people, I think.
The whole
I picked on philosophy. The whole humanities is that way as well.
English, et cetera.
Yeah. Who was it, and I won't remember this, I believe it was Winston Churchill when he was told that they needed to cut back on the arts and the humanities because they didn't have the resources, but they had to shift all of that over to the war. And he said, then what are we fighting for anyway?
Mm-hmm. The whole nation watched a controversy on the University of Missouri campus. What did you take away from that discussion that forced your peer at the University of Missouri to resign and another official of higher ed? Lessons you learned from that, sir?
Well, I think it's really important that part of what we're trying to deal with in the university and in our society is how do we integrate cultures, different viewpoints, different values. There is no place in our society that's more important to do that than in university. Because that's where you're trying to engage in different thinking, disparate views. That's exactly where that has to occur. So the concept of freedom of speech and freedom of expression is paramount in our environment. But it needs to be done in a civil, respectful way. Otherwise, we're merely shouting the other person down. We're not learning. We're not pursuing truth. And that's critically important. So we need to make people feel welcome. We need to make them feel comfortable. But a learning environment, an academic environment, by its very nature, is often a little disconcerting because it's challenging our beliefs. So we have to accept that. And we have to reach out to people so they understand that and explain that to. Every so often, democratic society has to go through that, reassess its priorities and its principles.
Should the players on a Division I football team be able to, and their threat to not play, should they be able to indirectly get your peer in Missouri fired?
Well, should they be able to? I'm not going to make a comment on that. They should have the right to say, I'm not going to play. They should have the right to express themselves freely. They should have that right, certainly. That's a part of what America is all about.
Were you surprised that their threat to not play played a role in the decision of your peer to step down?
I don't know whether it obviously played a role as a piece of it, but I don't know there were a number of other factors in that situation other than the racial strife that campus was experiencing.
Is the UW system in a much better place vis-a-vis the University of Missouri in some of those examples?
I think we're in a better place, but we're not where we should be. I think we have a long ways to go.
Ways to go in terms of
Racial conflict. Yeah, I think we had a meeting at the House just recently with a group of members from the communities of color in this community. A wonderful meeting. We have been promising changes and we've been working towards some of those changes, but we haven't moved the dial very much. And I think we have to work harder at that, and we have to be committed as human beings, particularly human beings that work at a university, to make sure that all members of our society are engaged, welcome, but that we do that with an understanding of the primacy of free speech. That has to be paramount in a university.
What's your reaction when the University of Wisconsin-Madison loses a defensive coordinator to LSU, which is going to pay him, I believe, $1.3 million? What about the fact that LSU's defensive coordinator is going to get $1.3 million, sir?
Well, I don't like that. I think that's inappropriate. At the same time, most of those programs at that level pay their own way. That is not true of all NCAA athletic programs. I think we all know that.
There's a big disparity, isn't there?
Big disparity. And Dave was a tremendous coach. He's a tremendous coach.
Mr. Aranda.
Yeah. He has done a wonderful job here, and I understand that the offers come for that. I think it's also important to realize that the primacy here at Madison and throughout the University of Wisconsin is these are scholar athletes, and I think that's wonderful. I'm not speaking disparagingly about others. I know that's our priority, and I stand behind that fully.
Would you have been supportive if UW-Madison would have countered to Mr. Aranda with more than $1 million to keep him? Or is that just beyond the pale of what salaries are?
Normally what happens when coaches' salaries are adjusted is they attempt to identify peers in similar institutions. And had he fallen outside of that definite range, it would have been difficult for us to approve a salary increase of that high, when I say that high, outside of that peer range. And that's generally how we look at that. There are exceptions to be made. I don't think there's anyone in this community that doesn't think highly of Dave Aranda and what he's done. We wish him well. We certainly feel badly about losing him.
Is Division I sports, we're talking the day after the national championship won by Alabama, is it wagging the dog in terms of academics at some of these larger universities, right?
I think so. In some cases it does. I think we work very hard here. I know Becky does, and I know Barry does, to make sure that's not the case, and at the same time put on the field a competitive bunch of players and team, and prepare them not just to be athletes in their lives, but to be great citizens and great people. And I admire that greatly.
Two final questions. What do you hope the Supreme Court rules on the issue of affirmative action, Mr. Cross?
I believe that holistic admissions are really important, that we're preparing people for us, a society that by, 2050 is going to be a minority-majority. We're preparing students for the future. How do we prepare them effectively for a changing world? I believe that has to play a role. And the other part of that is we have to find a better way to reach into those communities and serve them better. And we keep trying things, and we have some success, but it has to be at a higher level.
And then finally, the biggest challenge facing you and the Regents over the next 2 to 4 years, given the past, the four-year tuition freeze and the cut in state aid, the biggest challenge looking out over the next 2, 4, 5 years?
Very similar to the challenges facing the state. The state and the university are so interconnected that if the state succeeds, we will succeed, and vice versa. If we succeed, we can help the state succeed. I think the challenges are not only economic, but they're demographic. As the population in the state ages and the number of working-age adults as a portion of that population shrinks, we need workers, and we need to keep them here, attract and retain them. That has to be a priority over the coming years. We don't have a choice. It will dramatically negatively impact the state by the year 2030 easily.
Ray Cross, president of the UW System, always a pleasure. Thanks for joining Wisconsin Eye again.
Thanks to you.
Thank you.